Time to talk some Civil War, Oregon State sports. He's the triple threat, voice of Beaver football, basketball, and baseball. And alongside our buddy John Warren, he brings you the Joe Beaver Show, noon till 2 on 1240 Joe Radio to the North. On Twitter, you could follow along. Use the handle at MEPOSU. Mike Parker joins us. Mike, feels like it's been a while. How are things?
It has been a while, Steve, but I feel like, and you know how it is in the radio world, even though we haven't talked for a while, I listen to you every day, you know, as I'm driving around up here. Love your guys' show. So I feel close to you. I listen to you a lot. And so it's been a long time since we've been on the air together, but I feel, you know, radio creates that kind of, it's odd. You probably knew it as a kid and still do. When you listen to somebody every day, whether sports talk radio or ball games, you just kind of feel like you know the person. They're friends, even if you don't communicate that often directly.
Yeah, you feel like you're part of the inner circle in some ways.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's hit rewind. The first season under Gary Anderson was rough. It looked like they turned a corner last year, won the last couple games, three-pack 12 games. But either way, with Anderson's previous success, I kind of sensed optimism heading in. You're very close to the program. What's your level of surprise that we sit here the Tuesday before Thanksgiving and OSU needs a win, or they don't have any FBS wins this season?
Would astonished be a strong enough word, Steve? This year is gone. I don't know if that falls short. That's an understatement. I wasn't with some of the people who thought that he might win 7 or 8 games. I thought they could push, though, to 6 wins and bowl eligibility, a phrase that at one time I thought, well, you know, I used to kind of hate bowl eligible. Come on, life's got to be better than that. That's your threshold. It sounds pretty good right about now, given that the Beavers haven't been to one since 2013. Bowl eligible, I know, sounds pretty good this year down where you are, too. I mean, just, you know, given first year and trying to come off of your own 4-8 misery. Bowl eligible sounds pretty good, and that's what I expected this year. I thought the Beavers would go into the Civil War either there already or with a chance to win to get there. So I've just been, it's been a stupefying kind of season, another strong word to throw in. But there were some signs pretty early, that Colorado State game that the Beavers were competitive in, but let get away late, and then the following game, when they had to struggle for all their might and were fortunate to beat Portland State, I think we knew then, some things are amiss this year, and that certainly proved to be true as the year went along.
Yeah, you know, I found also the Minnesota game troubling. It got into that second half, and the Gophers made no bones about it. They just ran right down their throat. And then all of a sudden, it's the USC game is over, and we wake up and we hear that Gary Anderson and the program are parting ways. I guess there might be issues we'll never know. But again, I hate to keep using shock, surprise. Were there any whispers? I mean, to us down here, it was like, what? How much of a shocker was that?
Yeah, that just in keeping with the theme that we've already touched on, Steve. I mean, that's part, you know, being shocked, astonished, stupefied by the season. That took many of us by surprise. I will say that, you know, now that when you look back after the fact, I had noticed Scott Barnes at more practices the last couple of weeks heading into the USC game. Scott and Gary talking a lot after practices, you know, but again, they're friends. You know, they work together. Scott hired Gary at Utah State, where Gary's career began to launch in a pretty good direction. You know, the big year that he had there to get the Wisconsin job, 2 good years at Wisconsin. I thought the marriage of Scott and Gary back here together was going to be a big hit. And in fact, I think Beaver Nation needs to remind itself, we all need to remind ourselves that when Gary was hired about this time in 2014, it felt like a long shot home run for the program to get a sitting D1 coach leaving Wisconsin to come to Oregon State. But as I look back now, those conversations were perhaps about timing and what was going to happen after the USC game, because the conversations were much more even visible to all of us, noticing that Scott was around a little bit more those last couple of weeks, but none of us thought that had anything to do with Gary resigning mid-season.
Wow. Talking Oregon State football with the voice of the Beavs, Mike Parker. That first game under Coach Corey Hall, the interim coach, against Colorado, they outplayed him. They should have won that game. I mean, too many field goals. Then they had the gut punch loss to Stanford. So what happened since then, if you were a betting man, what chances does Coach Hall have of staying, or are they more likely to open it up and see who's available nationally?
I think it leans a little more towards the latter scenario, Steve. I do think there's still a scenario, maybe a couple even, whereby he might stay, depending on if somebody else is hired and it's the right kind of fit. I know that the players love Coach Hall. He loves Oregon State. He loves Corvallis. I think he's a potential rising star in the coaching profession, but he's pretty young in the coaching profession. So I think there's some growing and seasoning for him, but I think he'd like to do it here under the right circumstances. Now, if the Beavers win the 121st Civil War this Saturday as heavy underdogs, that might throw him back into the conversation on an emotional front from players who would rally around, and they might carry him off the field. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I have no idea what a win in the Civil War could do, but I do know that we've all been greatly impressed by the way he's carried himself, by the way the players have embraced him, the way he loves his players, and you know, for a while, you're right, Steve, the emotion, the football was good, but I think there was a real sense of galvanizing around him and guys buying into his message and a fresh start. Felt like a weight and a burden lifted with whatever issues were going on when Gary was here, and some things were, there were some disconnects clearly. I think he breathed life into the program again, a breath of fresh air. Then some reality in the form of injuries, and then the opponents and the matchups that weren't conducive to great success. The Beavs haven't been able to sustain the kind of level they had those first 2 weeks. But I think Corey's got one last rallying point in him for the Civil War. I'm expecting a more competitive game than I know a lot of people are based on the results last week and Herbert's return. But I think Corey will have the guys play the game of their lives, and whether that gives him a shot to retain the full job or be part of a new staff, my hope is Corey is still part of Beaver football somehow next year.
And Mike, one number that's kind of tough to ignore, attendance. I remember watching that Stanford game Thursday. That place looked half empty. You hear from fans, media members, and of course those within the walls of the Valley Football Center. How much of a concern is maybe what's happening at the turnstiles?
Very big concern, Steve, clearly. And I do think the one thing that, I mean, the numbers have not been good. Season ticket numbers are down. It's a difficult time for a pretty resilient fan base over the years in Beaver Nation. But I do think that the timing of Coach Anderson's announcement and whatever all went into that for Gary to resign midseason has sort of, even if the fans haven't been coming, and they haven't, you know, in the type of numbers you need and you would like, I do think the fan base is engaged from the standpoint of the coaching search, and I don't think ready to completely abandon things, even if it's a loss on Saturday and an 0-4 again in the conference. I think the fans are watching this next hire. It's as big a moment, you know, for Oregon State Athletics in a long, long time, and almost back to when Mike Riley was hired in 97 and began to dig out of the 28 years of losing seasons. I think a lot of fans who've been through that don't want to go through that again, but I think there's still, even if they're not coming in numbers, I still think there's a belief that with the infrastructure in place, the facilities that are so far better than they were years ago, with Gary leaving some money on the table that allows competitive salaries for assistants, and to Gary's credit, there's still some good young players. You'll see some of them Saturday, Steve. The Beavers have some young playmakers in the secondary, and even in the linebacking core. They've been beat up, and they're not particularly good against the run, as we've seen. That needs to improve. But Gary recruited well enough. There's some dynamic young playmakers that the right coach and the right system, I think, will take advantage of, and the turnaround won't take three, 4, or 5 years, I think it can be affected more quickly, and that'll get everybody back on board.
Yeah, I wanted to hit on a couple of positives. Now a senior, their top tackler, most tackles for loss. You know, for folks here who might not be all that familiar, what could you tell us about Manasseh Hungalu and maybe the kind of career and player he's been for OSU?
He has a chance to play at the next level. You know, I think he's played himself into an opportunity at the next level, and I wouldn't have thought that a couple of years ago. But last year, he came on strong and showed, oh, hey, this guy can play. And he has been, at times, it feels like at times, almost a one-man show on defense, as banged up as the defense has been. But Kevin Kloon, the D coordinator here, says that Manasseh can do things physically and can decipher things on the move as well as any player, in fact, better than anybody he's ever coached. And Kevin's been around a lot of good players. So I think Manasseh Hungalu, number 55, bears watching tomorrow, or Saturday, pardon me, if the Beavers are to have a shot at slowing down the revivified Oregon run game and offense. Manasseh will be right in the middle of it, but he's a great football player,
yeah.
And he's developed. He was a Mike Riley recruit. He's developed through the years, and I know wants to go out on a good note. I love the kid and look forward to seeing him play on the next level.
Final couple thoughts for the voice of the Beavs, Mike Parker. The offensive line, which has some good moments this season, they only have one senior, Fred Loina. You know, the starters on the left side are sophomores. Sumner and Trent Moore come back. So from what you witnessed this year, along with some of the younger players we might not be familiar with, that seems like that might be a reason for optimism moving forward next year.
It's been hit and miss a bit with that group. You're right, Steve. I do think these guys will continue to develop and get bigger and stronger and more physical. And I think part of the whole thing was the frustrations of the year, a disjointedness in terms of identity. I mean, Gary himself, there was a pretty bright red flag when someone asked him about 3 weeks in, what is your identity on offense? And his answer was, that's a good question. So, I mean, I don't know if you remember that soundbite, but Gary was honest enough to at least 3 or 4 weeks into the year, from a head coaching position, come back to his interlocutor with, that's a good question, because they were searching for it. And, you know, they needed to start the year, in my opinion, the way they finished last year, and that was running the ball as they did against Arizona and Oregon. I realize two historically bad defenses and the job that Jim Leavitt has done for Oregon is phenomenal in terms of the run defense being about 140 yards better than it was a year ago. It's amazing. But I still feel as though the Beavers almost look like a group that, behind a pretty good offensive line. Now, the Beavers lost three guys from that offensive line, and I thought that they felt they could just plug guys in and keep it going. That never was the case, really. They've not had a consistent physical push up front. And, you know, all those guys that you talk about, yes, they do return, but they've got to get bigger and stronger and more physical to impose their will in the run game next year. That's something they fell a little bit short of this year.
And lastly, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the passing of Bobby Doerr. I mean, I've got a great relationship with Guarantee, had the pleasure of having him as a guest over the years, meeting him. I know you have as well. So maybe what you want to share about the times you've crossed paths with the late, great Hall of Famer.
Well, I'm glad you did too, Steve, because I know, you know, your love for the game, your love for baseball, his place in it, and even for you, you know, as the ultimate Yankee fan, you understood you were talking to baseball royalty when you're visiting
yep.
with the great Red Sox, Bobby Doerr. You're able to, you know, and I'm sure I'd love to have heard your conversations. I miss those. I bet they were wonderful and things you'll never forget, right? I mean, that's how I felt in the few times I interacted with Bobby Doerr. You know you're talking about, you must have really enjoyed those conversations.
Oh, yeah. I was like a little kid.
Yeah, no, exactly. And his relationship with the great Ted Williams, I was glad that Teddy Ballgame advocated for and pushed for his teammate and friend Bobby to make the Hall of Fame, and the Veterans Committee did right by Bobby in 1986. But, you know, Bobby himself was never, he wasn't blowing his own horn. I know he was honored, as you know, and he is a Hall of Famer, and and deserves to be in Cooperstown. But I just thought it was one of the better things about Ted Williams' life, which was fraught with controversy through the years, and even in his end, his death was controversial with a family dispute and all of that. But it always struck me that the great Teddy Ballgame's friendship with Bobby Doerr was one of the real genuine, solid, heartfelt things in Ted's life. I think they were good for each other, and Halberstam's book brings that out, too. If you have you read Teammates? That's a really
I have. Awesome.
So, you know, so Bobby being that close to the legend, Ted Williams, you know, is cool for Bobby Doerr, but I think it was as important to Ted as it was certainly to Bobby. But I think Ted's advocacy helped Bobby get into the hall where he belongs, and we lost a true gentleman and legend recently in Bobby Doerr.
He is Mike Parker, folks. He'll be behind the mic for another Civil War this Saturday. Follow him on Twitter at MEPOSU. Mike, great catching up. And as basketball season moves along, we'll have to chat again. I want to wish you and yours a healthy and happy Thanksgiving. And it's always great talking with you, Mike.
Same to you, Steve and Alex. Thanks. I love listening to you guys. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Take it easy.